Oh, hello.
Hello.
And welcome to the New York Mystery Machine.
Townie Hall, but for ghosts.
But for all the ghosts, Christina and I are once again remote. And in theory, I don't know, because it's Christina and nothing is simple. Mm-hmm. I got Christina her new microphone as promised on the show. Mm-hmm. It's a nice little microphone.
It's wonderful.
But Christine, you tell them why I can't hear it.
So I am in.
First and foremost, notice the fact that Christine is speaking in hushed tones.
Right. So Tammany is asleep in the other room, and I am in a different room that I would normally record because it'll be quieter for her. And as a result, I am on my phone for Zoom purposes so that I can see and hear Adam. So my headphones are plugged into my phone, but this new fancy mic is plugged into the computer and recording. And in order to hear myself, which I guess I can hear, it just doesn't feel like I can hear it on myself, actually. I still can't hear myself on this microphone. Maybe I need to turn it up. We're figuring this out. Oh, nope, that just turns up my computer sound. Weird. Anyway, I've got two different sets of headphones in my ears. One of them is plugged into the mic, and the mic is plugged into the computer, and we're just gonna pray real hard.
We're gonna pray really, really hard that we don't need to re-record this whole thing again.
You know what?
Well, in any case, welcome to the show, y'all. Once again, we are remote, but we are doing our darndest here on the old New York Mystery Machine. Babies and all.
Babies and all.
The season's rapidly coming to, starting to wind down is what
Crazy.
We're realizing. Something that we've realized that there's only we're in March now and April's coming on up. And then the way we look at it, we have just about 15 episodes leftish.
Before
season 3 wraps. And I think this is the first time that I've said season 3 wraps, because I always keep saying season 2 for some reason, because I can't ever remember what season we're on. So yeah, it's going to be fun. And look, there's a whole slew of fun things happening before the season wraps, or you not. We got 5 road trip episodes in April. We have another interview coming your way. A new
Very
cool
exciting.
Interview. We're not going to tell you what that is just yet. We have a collab with John and Carrie coming back again. Ooh. And then we have our season 3 finale review, where we talk about all of your theories and whatnot. Speaking of your theories, you guys, do you have a theory about one of the episodes that we've covered? Maybe it's the episode you're currently listening to. Maybe it's an episode that we've done in the past. Whatever the case may be, do you yourself, person, listener, friend of the show, lover, do you have a theory about one of our episodes? Well, now all you're gonna do is head on over to the Hot Take Hotline. That's right.
Man.
If you call 917-426-4262, you can leave us
Great
a message
number.
With your hot take. Adam, I'm not writing that down. Is there an easy way for me to get that number? Of course there is. I got you, boo-boo. You head to our show notes. That means just go to the space, you know, where the description of our show is on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you're listening. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, you can just click the number right on it. It'll take you right. It'll dial you right in. If you're on Spotify, the number's there for you. And so we would love to hear your hot takes. In addition, because we love hearing from you, so much, we know that there's some of you who have had weird shit happen to them. We know that there are such strange happenings in your life, whether you went to a weird haunted hotel or like your old grandpa was haunting you in your house one day. I don't know. We want to hear what your stories are. So once again, head over to the show notes or head over to our Instagram, wherever the case may be, and tell us your haunted story. If you go to our Instagram, our link in bio, our link tree has all those resources, including where to go to tell us your story. It's also in our show notes. We want to hear from you. We want to know the crazy, zany things that are happening in your life. We want to hear from our machinists, right? That's what we call them, the machinists?
I think that's what we just said.
I don't like that, but we'll say for now. We want to hear from you. So be sure to let us know what is happening What scary things are happening? What hot takes you have? We're all ears, and we're ready to. And if we get enough of those hot takes, we'll share them all on that finale episode. So it'll be a really, really fun time. We really want to continue to incorporate you guys into the show. So
please, dial into that number, because it took us like 40 takes,
and we're still gonna. And we have to
laughing,
and we have to retake it because we're not pleased with it. So you know,
just dial in and humor us.
Dial in. Hey, Christina.
Thinking works, right?
Where are we today?
We are in Queens. Our story takes
place in Queens. I've heard such stories of Queens, like it being like linguistically diverse or something, but yet I've not seen any evidence.
I literally posted an article from the Times with it. It's fine.
They didn't show their work. I didn't see. Did you hang out in Queens and get a log of everyone's languages? Because that's the work, as far as I'm concerned.
I will go and I will find some citations for you, Mace. God.
Christina's very salty today because she has new equipment. She has a baby who's trying to sleep. I can tell when Christina's salty. She's not her normal, like, happy-go-lucky, silly Christina self today. So Lord knows what y'all are gonna get in this episode, but I'm getting daggers of hell.
Adam is getting salt,
and no pepper.
Salt and pepper.
Salt and what is this? Pepper.
Pepper.
Gosh, inside references. Anyway, where are we? Queens.
We're in Queens in the 1930s, and our story is going to start off in College Point in Queens. So College Point and nearby Whitestone, for those who don't know, are train to bus area of Queens. So pretty deep Queens, and I have to imagine they felt pretty remote in 1930, just because if you think about, like, up until the 1910s, like, Sunnyside is still farmland. So, like, this further out portion of Queens, you know, in 1930s, probably relatively, you know, remote feeling. The area is Matinacock land, and the first non-Indigenous settlers arrived from Europe in the 1630s, things I didn't know until I was looking stuff up. In the 20th century, the area was known for manufacturing of plane parts, and it even had its own airport, so Flushing Airport, which had stiff competition from LaGuardia Airport. Mm. And spoiler alert, only one of those is still in use. Flushing Airport closed in 1984. That's why
those are Flushing Airport. I didn't even know there was a Flushing Airport.
I know. In College Point. Why it wasn't in Flushing, beyond me.
Beyond me.
So today's story is a wild one that begins with an unusual opening event. So there's this woman, and she's having a date, and she's in a car with her date, and they're in this remote woodsy section of the College Point area, and her date gets brutally shot. And the murderer hands her a note and says, "Don't read this until tomorrow."
What?
And then he walks her calmly to a bus stop and leaves her otherwise unharmed.
What? Yeah.
It's a wild MO. It's a wild MO. Like, just every part of that. I especially love, like, this walking safely to a bus stop and getting her on a bus and saying, "Just don't read this note until tomorrow." So backing up, who are these players? Joseph Mozinski was the gentleman in question. He was born in 1891, so he was 39 in 1930, and he was a grocer in College Point, Whitestone. Mozinski had a delicatessen on... So Mozinski's delicatessen was on 22nd Avenue and 122nd Street in this area of Queens, and it supported him, his wife, Stella, and two kids. So Wednesday, June 11th, 1930 rolls around, and Mozinski tells his wife that he's going to go deliver some groceries, like you do. In reality, he had a date with a woman who went by the name of Catherine May, who was not his wife, but was a close friend of the two of them, so really, really awkward there.
Awkward.
They go for a ride, and then they have a little park and a chat and, you know, whatever else happens in a car.
Do you not know? Well, sometimes, Christina, when people are on dates and mm-hmm. they pull over in the car, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. sometimes they listen to the radio. And other times they'll embark in some activity.
Oh, like reading?
Not reading, because reading would, I don't know, I mean, I don't think reading is a very, you know, fun date thing to do.
Side note
to those people who like read together, like couples who read books together, like at the same time. I don't get it. I'll never get it. I don't understand it. I don't know. Anyway, no, not reading.
Can't imagine what.
It's something that sometimes results in something that you have recently created.
I baked recently.
You did bake. You baked something in your stomach for.
That's true.
For 9 months.
We have to assume that. In theory, you baked it.
Or I mean, it still could be aliens.
Could still be aliens.
I am not convinced that your child's not an alien.
No one is necessarily convinced. Again, those were some good hospital drugs they gave me. So they pull over onto this lonely dirt road, quote unquote, right between the Cross Island Boulevard and Willits Point Boulevard, if anyone feels like looking at the geography of the area. So at this point, according to Catherine May, the mistress, a man came out of nowhere, shot Mazinski, and, you know, then gave her this note and walked her to the bus stop and then walked away. She never got a good look at his face and understandably just sort of like, was on a mission to get the hell out of there. And this is because she said of the murder, but also she was afraid of Mrs. Mozinski and what other people might misunderstand the situation.
It's like, you have to understand, we were just in the car reading.
Just reading. That's what people don't get. You pull over into a darkened area and read in a car.
Just read in the car.
So in the process of hustling away from this car, she leaves her velvet coat behind, and this is how the police find her. So the police find the body the next day, they find the car, they're like, oh dear, and they find this velvet coat, and I guess there's something inside it that they say, aha, Catherine May, this must be hers, and
aha,
they go to her house. She has not reported this. She just sort of laid low until the police came knocking on the door and were like, hello, did you leave a velvet coat in a car with a murdered man? And she said yes. And that's when she hands the paper the murderer had given her over. And the only thing written on this paper was Joseph Mozinski, 3X3-X-097. So here's what Catherine May was quoted as saying in the newspapers. We were in the back of the grocery truck when a strange man came up and shot Joseph without saying a word, she insisted. Then he dragged Joseph out and went through his pockets. Afterwards, he poked a gun in my ribs and forced me to accompany him. He made me get on a streetcar, then he vanished. So pretty quickly, the police are starting to think about who is the likeliest person to want to kill a man having an affair. And given that the killer was reportedly a man, per Catherine May, the cops begin to surmise that the man was somehow connected to Catherine May, perhaps a man who wanted to date Catherine, but whom Catherine spurned, for instance. So by June 14th, Catherine had changed her story and two men were arrested. She apparently gave the name Lombardo, and so they arrested an Albert Lombardo and a Joseph Moisette from Chicago. Now, Moisette was a former boyfriend, and Lombardo, you know, she claimed was a guy that was hired for the job. But then she immediately, the following day, says, no, I should never have said that. I don't even know a Lombardo. I was just really tired of being questioned.
So I made shit up.
Yeah. And then she even confesses to the murder herself at one point. And this was, you know, I guess under great stress and duress. Apparently they asked her to reenact the crime, and based on what she, I don't understand this. Apparently based on her reenactment, the detectives felt she was simply trying to shield somebody else.
Okay.
So put that away in your hat, so to speak.
It's in my hat.
Police then begin to work a new theory. Perhaps Mozinski was bound up in something to do with bootlegging. Apparently, a month before his murder, Mozinski had put $9,000 in his bank, which I guess is a lot of money if you're just a grocer in Queens. So they began to think about this potential other connection. Fun little aside, while Catherine was being questioned, she apparently got very little sleep and was questioned for very long stretches of time, which I guess is why she confessed and made up all these other stories. But apparently she held up pretty well despite this. And in the Times Union, a detective working the case said, quote, "If Ruth Snyder had the mental agility of this girl, she and Judd Gray might today be walking the streets," unquote, which is a reference to the Snyder case, which we covered in a previous episode, and is famous not only for its double indemnity angle, of its attempt to blame Italians for murder by strewing bits of Italian newspapers around the crime scene.
We love the orgy there. They'll know it's the Italians because the Italians love the orgy.
So I saw that. I was like, I need to give Adam a chance to pull out his Italian.
The Italians love the orgy. We'll leave the orgy there. Then they'll know it's Italian. Ah.
So while this is going on, you know, they're investigating. Catherine May is giving 20 different stories. Something else happens. On June 17th, 1930, the Times Union runs an article in which they say that a man by the name of Noel Sowley was found shot to death on a roadside near a park in a wooded section of Queens, 2 bullets through his head. According to the report, it was suspected that there had been a woman with him at the time. So some of this just sound pretty familiar, right? Far Eastern Queens, late night tryst, remote setting, shot in a car. But it's, you know, it's New York and people aren't immediately saying these are the same people, you know, the same guy. Here's what that, spoiler alert, it is going to be the same guy. Here's what the woman who was with Noel that night said. "Noel and I had parked his car there," so there being the Creedmoor section of Queens Village, "for a while Monday night, and we were about to leave. A strange shadow moved up toward the left side of the coupe where Noel sat. It was a man, and he kept mumbling something about the papers. Before Noel could turn, the man pulled a revolver and shouted at him, 'You get it like the other fellow.' Then he fired twice. The bullet hit Noel in the head, and he was dead. I screamed. The man told me to keep quiet and I wouldn't get hurt. He laughed when he pulled out a newspaper clipping telling how Joseph Mozinski was killed in Queens, and then he threw the clipping on Noel. He felt in Noel's pockets until he found something that looked like an electric company bill, and he said, 'That's it.' Then he made me sign my name and address to an envelope. My hand shook so I could hardly write. He said if I told anything about the murder, I would be killed. Then he took me by the arm and made me walk very fast with him. There isn't a house within 8 blocks from there, for almost a mile along Rocky Hill Road. Then he made me get on a bus, and it brought me to Jamaica."
Jesus.
So, as it turns out, this Noel Sowley and Betty Ring had previously been engaged up until August 2nd of 1929, at which point they had some sort of terrible fight, and Betty goes and marries some guy she just met out of spite. And, go figure, the marriage didn't work. She leaves that husband 6 weeks later, and eventually she and Sowley are now having this affair. Now you might say it was the husband, but the husband or ex-husband or estranged husband. However,
no, I don't say that. You say that. That's something that you say. That's something that you would say.
That is something I would say. Well, I have to accept that apparently the husband was able to account for his whereabouts, which I don't know. So between Betty Ring and Catherine May, a picture of this gunman begins to emerge. He's apparently about 5'6" with a European accent. Some suggest maybe German, and quote-unquote fish eyes. Now, it's not a ton to go on, but it's something. And then on June 18th, the Daily News runs this headline. "Lover's Lane fiend kills number 2. 14 more doomed," he warns. That's right. The murderer warns. Because by June 18th, 1930, the killer had sent not one, not two, but 4 letters to the police.
Jeez.
So according to the Daily News, the first couple of letters, which were sent to the New York Evening Journal, these were dismissed as like some crank doing whatever until, I guess, details emerged that indicated, no, this is someone who has a good degree of knowledge of the crime. So here is the text of that first letter. Adam, you knew it was coming.
Well.
It's this section here.
Got it. "Gentlemen, for your information, the young lady, Miss C, may be involved in the case, is innocent, and a victim of unfortunate circumstances. Muchinsky was nothing but a rascal, a dirty rat, not to a woman, as stated in the papers, but six, and two young girls, 1 14 and 1 15, were with him very often the same place. I am the agent of a secret international order. That's what Tara Arnold, the order was. Order.
Yeah.
A secret...
German-French, you're like from Alsace-Lorraine or something.
I am the agent of a secret international order. And when I met Muchinsky tonight, it was to get from him certain documents. But unfortunately, they were not in his possession at the time. If his brother knew so much of his luck with the woman, maybe he would tell us via the papers where and what became of the following items. The girl was put on the bus and sent home. We always get them through their women's friends. I advise you to publish the code message, or tomorrow night one more will go. You may let them know that 3X, the man behind the gun, he asks for no quarter, but will give none. On June 18th at 9 p.m., I will be at College Point to get WRV-8.
Thank you, Adam, for that lovely rendition of this unhinged letter. So there's just this whole lot of rambling and a code. And I should say that this is only part of the letter. He writes long letters, and they're always long and rambling and in, like, just absolutely, positively, mind-bogglingly bizarre. But he also includes the code NYX2613, and then NJ4344, and then Philadelphia XV356. These papers must be returned to us at once, or 14 more will go. Mm. The next letter reads as follows. Adam.
A city editor, kindly print this message in your paper for Muchinsky's friends. CC-NY-ADCM-Y16A-DQR-PA.241-PM6 Queens. By doing this, you will save their lives. We do not want any more shooting unless we have to. And the woman may know where these papers are and who has given them, since they were given Muchinsky for safekeeping 6 months ago. And he tried to use them for blackmail. Tell the bulls to wake up and snap out of it. Girlfriend. Signed, AV3X. I just imagine me a sassy German. Snap out of it, girlfriend.
I think that is the correct way to portray this serial killer.
I hope there's not another time I have to read the serial killer.
So the police were at a loss. What is this guy talking about? What are these documents? What is this 14 more? The implication is that he's going to kill a total of 16 people. And so then there's this third letter, which, for the record, was received about an hour after Sally's body was found. And so it reads,
Adam, you have not published the code message sent you? Too bad. For your information, there is more work for the police now. Tonight, Monday, at 10 p.m., Soli was bumped off near Flora Park. Not very far from police signal station. You will find him near the auto junk pile. We have selected this night to do it, as Muchinsky was buried today. This is our second warning. 13 more men and women will go the same way if they do not return two of the missing papers. The New York document was found on Saudi last night and has come out of our money, and was the case of Miss C. May. I will advise you to publish the code message for tomorrow night will go. You may let them know that 3X is man behind the gun. He asks for no quarter, but will give none. On June 18th at 9 p.m., I will be at College Point to get WRV-8. Girlfriend.
So a fourth letter was also received on June the 17th by the mother of Catherine May, in which it says, I had planned to kill your daughter too, but her bravery won her life. Your daughter is innocent of Muchinsky's murder. So he's very concerned to get the police off of Catherine May. Now, at this point, the newspapers are trying to figure out what the hell's going on. They say this WRV-8 must be one of the few real clues about the identity of the next victim. But the detectives are like, no, this is not a real lead. This is nonsense. Regardless, they had a date, they had a time, they had a place, and soon every police officer that could be spared was out looking for the 3X killer. And what happens, we will find out after the break.
We'll be back after these messages. Let's talk about Audible.
Yes. Audible is the leading provider of spoken word entertainment and audiobooks, ranging from bestsellers to memoirs, news, business, and more. And now you can start your own free trial by heading to www.audibletrial.com/NY Mystery Machine.
Your free 30-day trial comes with one credit, 2 credit for Amazon Prime members, good for any premium selection titles you like, yours to keep. The Audible Plus catalog consists of podcasts, audiobooks, guided wellness, and Audible originals. Listen all you want, no credits needed.
Audible allows you to download titles and listen offline, anytime, anywhere. Perfect for long trips or even cozy afternoons to yourself.
The app is free and can be installed on smartphones and tablets, and you can listen across devices without losing your spot.
I just recently checked out The Mad Sculptor by Harold Schechter, which we based a whole episode on.
You're darn right we did. And I'm sure they have even more true crime and paranormal books in the collection as well.
Again, Audible isn't just audiobooks. They have podcasts, guided wellness programs, theatrical performances, A-list comedy, and exclusive Audible originals you won't find anywhere else.
Wait, podcast? Does that include the New York Mystery Machine?
Sure does. To start your free 30-day trial, head to www.audibletrial.com/NY Mystery Machine.
That's www.audibletrial.com/NY Mystery Machine. The New York Mystery Machine is brought to you in part by listeners like you.
That's right. Head on over to our Patreon, and for as little as $3 a month, you can help keep the pod growing.
By joining, you can access a whole bunch of cool stuff, such as mini episodes, swag, exclusive playlists, and more.
Head to www.patreon.com/NY Mystery Machine to find out more and become a patron.
That's www.patreon.com/NY Mystery Machine and join our ever-growing community today. And we're back.
I love the idea that with every reading, this he gets just a little sassier.
A little sassier.
So we have two men dead so far. There are a whole bunch of notes from this very sassy German guy threatening to kill again, ostensibly 14 more times unless he gets the documents that he is searching for. So the cops are out en masse trying to find this guy, and they have some of their cops dress up as women and hang out in cars with other cops to try to lure the killer to come, like, to the lover's lane and you know, be interested in this scenario. They have, like, 1,000 officers out on the beat. And they do apprehend a couple of suspects. One was found in a heavily wooded section of College Point, creeping around in the underbrush. And a second was apprehended in Richmond Hill. And he was hanging out in a parked car and claimed to be waiting for a friend. And when no one showed up, the police took him into custody. But nothing seems to really come of these two suspects. And so the theories begin to rack up. The newspapers start speculating about the codes used in the notes. In particular, there's some suspicion that maybe things like NYX2673 and NJ4344 in some way have to do with baseball lottery tickets. I don't really know what they mean by that, but apparently, do you know what they mean by that?
No.
Yeah, okay, I have no idea. Apparently, it's some sort of thing, because they refer to it in the Daily News as, having these numbers and symbols that are used on baseball lottery tickets. And apparently Mozinski did dabble in baseball pool payments, and one of his tickets was stamped with notations of large sums of money. So perhaps what I'm getting from this is some sort of gambling thing, right? That maybe it's like the 1930s version of fantasy football, but with baseball and lottery tickets. Do with that as you will. But apparently one of the letters...
century version of fancy baseball. Like, maybe it's just the 1920s, 30s version of fantasy football, but for baseball or for fantasy baseball, which is also a thing.
I don't know stuff. So apparently one of the letters that was sent, because again, despite there being absolutely crazy letters, I'm not having you read all of them. They go on. One of them talked about being paid $37,000, and there was a baseball ticket found on Mazinski that was stamped for, it says Philadelphia, and received $3,700. So perhaps there's some sort of connection there. Other people suggested that perhaps the murderer was an escaped patient from the Creedmoor Asylum. But when they gave photographs of patients, of the attendants, neither Catherine nor Betty were able to identify the individual. I mean, granted, neither of them seemed to have gotten a really good look at his face, but they looked at the photos and said, no, they don't think this is anyone here. There was even an inmate by the name of Joseph Ustica, who had escaped Creedmoor the previous month, and he had been known to talk about the papers and the protection of American womanhood, and had been sent to Creedmoor after he murdered a guy by the name of William F. Gilbride in Brooklyn. But again, they showed a picture and they're like, I don't think it's him. Another suggestion was a religious zealot of some kind. According to Betty, when Sally was dying, the murderer tried to kiss Betty, but spotted a St. Joseph medal around her neck and asked, are you a Catholic? And to this, Betty said, yes. And then the murderer said, well, it's lucky for you that you are. I wouldn't hurt you for anything. And then proudly showed that he was wearing a St. Christopher's medal.
Oh, there it is.
Do with that as you will. And finally, there was a pastor of a church in Sheepshead Bay that said he wondered if it was one of his former parishioners, who he hadn't seen in some time. Because according to this pastor, this individual was a former government agent, had handwriting similar to that of the 3X killer, I guess they looking at the, you know, the newspaper photographs, and would sometimes fire his revolver at imaginary creatures or look out windows and suddenly shout, there they are. Alas,
there they are.
There they are. At last, this individual was eventually found and was able to account for his whereabouts, so no dice there. Now, according to the Daily News on June 20th, the killer was still sending letters, going so far as to threaten the family of the victims, prompting a multi-state protection plan to be implemented. So, for example, one letter read, quote, all the brothers of the dead man are marked for a similar fate if the secret papers are not returned, unquote. So as a result, John Mazinski, who happened to be the in Philadelphia, which is often mentioned in these weird codes, you know, he got a detective guard situation going on. But it's worth noting that the sixth and seventh letters received had handwriting differences from the original sets. So there's some question as to whether this is the same person, if there's someone else impersonating him. Though handwriting experts were like, no, if the guy's under increased stress, it could be by the same individual. And if you're being hunted by the police, ostensibly you are under some kind of stress. So here is the seventh letter. Adam.
Dear sir, WRV8 of CP has returned the Philadelphia XV346 to Met tonight after reading your paper. Also, $3,700 of the Black Bear money. Thanks to God, if I may use his name. It just felt like a giggle needed to be there.
100%. That was an excellent, excellent character choice.
This means the following persons will be spared. WRV8 College Point, S12 College Point, K2 Brooklyn, Z3, the woman in question, the tall blonde, M6 NYC, XXV, NYC Police Department Detective. His initials are Vitelled. The following document, still missing, NJ4344 and $3,900. For this document, the following people still are marked for death. X14, X21, Y2, L6, X7, X1, V4, all initials withheld. Too much of a clue for the super detectives of Bayside. Mozinski's number was R9, Soli's number X4. Please print this final message to the 7 men left on the death list. NJCCK233VV3KRQS4MLTRP49CX.
I just really love making Adam read long strings of nonsensical numbers and letters. It's like listening to Adam read the password to a Wi-Fi that you're still setting up.
What is the password? It is CalamityCat Z421314HVL269345765. Was that 95 or no? 7695. Again, you were supposed to be the voice person on the show.
You know, how little we knew about ourselves when we started this.
How the turns table.
How the turns table. The letter went on saying about how the woman with Sally was an iron girl and that her belief in God saved her. He also talked about how Moisette and Catherine May were innocent. And then of the police, he said, they will never find out who I am. One word from anyone means death or a long term to state or federal penitentiary. Again, thank you for your kindness. Also, no one needs to fear me, only those marked for death, and I hope they heed the warning. And then finally, there was yet another letter that arrived to the Evening Journal. Adam, take it away.
Yes, sir. The last document. NJ4344, return to us on the 19th at 9 p.m. My mission is ended. There's no further cause for worry. The first sign means A, the Supreme Tribunal of the Order.
And I should interrupt here just to say, when he's talking about these signs, some of the way that he signed his letters had this weird A over V symbol situation. So that's what he's explaining, the different parts of the symbol. Go on.
The second V is Special Agent. The two combined, that is A over the V, form the Red Diamond of Russia, a secret order all over the world. Anyone breaking the rules is marked for death. They were all our friends, but came in contact with the group of blackmailers and the drug ring and turned against us. Who am I? Not much. I'm reading it for the first time, y'all. So, like, sometimes I say these things, I'm like, what the fuck am I saying? Who am I? Not much. An ex-German army officer of Wilhelmstrasse office, Berlin, during the war. Now in the service of the Red Diamond of Russia. Your policemen are brave men. Only they need training. I was watching them at CP College Point on the night of the 18th at 9 p.m. sharp. A German officer never breaks his word. Yes, right there. Have you heard a plane? It was a monoplane, small, fast. The plane circled over the CP, Flushing, Bayside, then went away. If you did, then you will know I was there. I am called back home, but before going away today, I want to say that your women are splendid. Courageous. I am deeply sorry for having stained your country with blood. But let this be a warning to all concerned. Treason, for one word, means death. You know what we want you to know. Quiet your people and tell them 3X is no more. HP12WA, don't let anyone fool you. If any more letters come, they're the fakes. Bye, girlfriend.
I love this character that he's here.
Put him on his backstory. Put him on the list. The sassy German.
I think one of my favorite things, and I'm so glad you picked up on how sassy he is, because in this letter, part that, you know, again, it's rambling, went on for pages, but at one point in this letter, he disputes the fact that he has fish eyes, as described by the witnesses.
He says, I have no fish eyes. How dare you say I have fish eyes? You don't know my eyes.
Adam, right here, read this.
I have no fish eyes. The police have fish eyes. I'm just a German.
I love the pettiness of it. I don't have fish eyes. You have fish eyes. Like a little kid. So some letters continue to show up in other places. So someone in Brooklyn gets one. Another sent to the Pittsburgh press saying that I'm in Pittsburgh now. The reverend who had suggested that it was his former parishioner, he ends up being sent a box from Philadelphia in which there was a rope and a note they read, do it now or I get you next, 3x45x. Jeez. Now, nothing came of these, and there's some dispute as to whether or not these were even genuine. But then, 3 months after the official goodbye off to Russia note, there was a letter deemed genuine that was mailed from Jersey City to a newspaper. Last time, Adam.
Bring it on home. I have come back to the U.S. Sorry to disturb the peace of your office, but after reading the reports forwarded to me, I believe I have come back at a propitious time to clear myself of the charges and restore some sense.
And then 3X proceeds to mention various people that he did not kill, but they had phony notes associated with their demise. So he's like, no, I didn't kill Morris Horowitz. No, I didn't kill Hector Avalon. And then he tells people to watch the U.S. border for Slavic people, keep an eye on the coastline, and suggested that the New York police should find the wireless station that was on Long Island, possibly in the vicinity of New Rochelle. But he said, rest assured, he would no longer be visiting terror upon Creedmoor and College Point. And at that point, 3X was never heard from again, and the murders remain unsolved. Adam, what do you make of this?
I have no idea what happened. I have no idea what just happened. I've spent roughly 45 minutes not knowing what the fuck has been happening. There's been letters. There's been a sassy German. Mm-hmm. Very appealing voice, though. I have no idea. I am the most confused I've ever been confused on an episode of the New York Mystery Machine of what was happening.
Yeah, that's fair. I think, not to be a stereotype of myself, I think the closest theory it's not going to be an actual secret agent, right? Secret agents don't go around saying, I belong to a secret order. Here's how you identify the symbol of my secret order.
Yeah, I mean, that shit made no sense. It's like, I am part of the secret order. Now you know all the letters for the secret order. It's like, what? It's like, spies don't say, hi, I'm a spy. Exactly. I'm part of a secret order.
So one theory I saw online, and there isn't a fascinatingly, I didn't find like a ton of message boards or anything about this, even though I feel like this is ripe for like picking apart. But one of the theories that was floated was that it was in fact perpetrated by one of the men in Catherine or Betty's life. And their thought was that it would be Catherine because it was the first. He immediately shot Mozinski, and then everything else is a smokescreen. Everything else is just to make it seem like this insane, ludicrous, secret agent, mass murderer situation is happening. And that really, it's pure and simple, the equivalent of the husband did it.
My God.
But that is the story of the 3X murders. And his name shows up once or twice more when there are... there's another string of murders in Lover's Lanes later in the 30s, and everyone's like, is it him? Is he back? Is it 3X? But
I think is it 3X bad?
Yeah, exactly. But that's it. Never solved. Never. Code is not broken, per se, assuming it's an actual code and not just random fucking letters.
Yeah, that was the most... bizarre thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, folks, if you have any thoughts on that episode or my
hot take
or my impeccable German accent, reach out to us. And the best way of reaching out to us is heading on over to the hot take hotline. It's real easy to do that. You head on over, you dial 917-426-4262. That's 917-426-4262. And just leave us a hot take. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. We will share all that jazz on a later episode. If you want to support the show, in a wonderful way, in a deep way, in a delightful way, you head on over to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/NYMysteryMachine. Thanks to the wonderful generosity of our patrons, we're able to buy Christine's remote microphone, which is really important.
Thanks, everyone, for that.
It's really important for the show that, you know, with Christina's transition into motherhood, her time, and she moved further from the studio, her time is a little more limited. And thanks to you guys, we're able to, solve problems with technology, which is really what we can and should do. And so that's, you know, how you guys know where that money goes to. It ain't going to fancy dinners. It's going to like stuff like this, you know. Through your generosity, we got a new headphones for the studio. We got two new wonderful mics for in studio, a new sound box in studio, and then Christina's microphone that we use for remote recording now as well. And so if you're interested in helping out the podcast in a deep way, we're always looking to improve our setup and improving our resources. Patreon.com/NYMysteryMachine. For as little as $3, you get to be part of the community. For as little as $5, you get a bonus episode, a Patreon exclusive episode for the February episode. Came out this past Friday. That's available on the Spotify stream of patrons or the Patreon app. Be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at NY Mystery Machine. Be sure to follow us on the X at NY Mysteries. We're back next week with an all-new episode of that New York Mystery Machine.
And I'm told it's a doozy.
It's a doozy. It is something that we've been talking about a little bit in the recent months. And so that is a teaser in the biz. Ooh. So you'll have to wait until next week, kids. I've been Adam Ace.
I've been Christina Marinelli.
And thanks for taking a ride on the New York Mystery Machine.
Tammany Hall, but for ghosts.